Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast for product managers, developers, and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, who gives you innovation training your customers will love you for. Get ready to take your career to the next level, for the doctor is in.
Hi, this is Chad, your host. This episode is about product management challenges, and I'm talking with Brian Lawley, the CEO and founder of the 280 Group, a company that provides product management and product marketing solutions. Brian and his team recently conducted a research project titled The Challenges in Product Management, and he's joining us today to discuss the findings from the study. To see the show notes for this episode, please go to theeverydayinnovator.com/044. You'll also find a link there to get a free copy of Brian's Optimal Product Process book. So you'll want to check it out, theeverydayinnovator.com/044. I want you to also know about productinnovationeducators.com. This is where I and other experts provide online training for product managers and innovators. To build your foundation as a product manager, check out productinnovationeducators.com. Now, on to the interview. Brian, thanks for joining me to discuss product management challenges. I'm glad you can be here today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Chad.
I'm sure the Everyday Innovators are looking forward to hearing that information too. It sounds like a very useful study to kind of get the state of product management and what's going on. I understand this is the first year of the study. Why did you decide to produce it?
Well, there's never been a comprehensive study about the challenges that product management organizations face. There have been studies about individual product managers and about things like salary and so on. But what we really wanted to capture was across a worldwide sample and across a whole variety of industries, what kinds of challenges, what are the biggest challenges that product management organizations face in terms of being successful in their organizations? And we got a tremendous response as a result of it. We sent out an invitation to our LinkedIn group, which has about 35,000 product managers in it, and then our newsletter and a bunch of other channels. Mm-hmm. We ended up getting almost 1,000 respondents who completed the entire survey and gave us some really excellent data.
Good response. Before talking about the specifics of the study, I'm just curious about your impressions about product management kind of overall, because you've been in the industry a long time, working as a product manager, starting at Apple, right? And weren't you a product manager on the Mac OS?
I was, yes, more years ago than I care to admit.
so, good place to cut your teeth and lots of experience in helping companies over the last many years.
Sure.
Big picture, just how have you seen product management kind of change over the last few years?
I think the biggest thing is the importance of it has been has become highly recognized. In fact, in corporations, there was a CBS Money Watch. Wrote an article where they said that product management is now the fourth most important profession in corporate America, behind only CEOs and general managers and senior executives. So it's really risen. Back when I started, it was known to be a critical function at companies like Apple and Microsoft and Hewlett-Packard, primarily in tech. And then over the years, it's really branched out. And like our customers are literally every single industry you could imagine, from tractor manufacturers to medical devices to, of course, lots of high tech, lots of software, lots of hardware, financial institutions, Wells Fargo and Bank of America. So really what's happened is over time, companies have realized that product management is a key strategic function and it's become much, much more important. That's one of the reasons we wanted to run this study. We have lots of clients who come to us and say, you know, we think our product management could be far better. And in fact, in the survey, one of the things that we asked was, you know, if you really optimized product management, what effect do you think it would have on your profits? Hmm. And average across all 850 people, they said if we were to really optimize product management, you know, optimize our process, train all our people, get our standardized documents and so on, they said, we think our profits would go up about 34%. So it's a huge potential increase for those companies. And there's just a lot of improvement that can happen. And companies, like I said, I think the biggest change around product management is companies are finally realizing that you have to have one group that's driving things strategically in order for your products to succeed.
Very good. So it's getting recognized more as a profession, the importance of the role of product manager. Regarding the study, so that was interesting, you know, the 34% number. You mentioned 850 people participated. What do you know about the participants in the study? Do we have some demographics and titles and roles and like?
Sure. We wanted to truly do a worldwide study. And in fact, we have a pretty good breakdown of everyone in the survey results, which you can download. We had 890 total respondents. About 30% of them were director and VP level. About 41% were product managers, and about 20% were senior product managers. Two-thirds of them were in the United States, but we did get a good representation from other areas like Europe and Canada. Many were in computers and software, about a third of them, but we have a whole, and then beyond that, it's a whole range of different industries and so on. So it's a pretty good cross-sample of product managers and product management managers, directors, and VPs. And again, it is worldwide, and it's across a whole range of industries.
Yeah, it's a good collection, and it's important to have that perspective of the VPs, the people responsible for the functions that product management fall into, and also that difference in senior product managers and product managers is good too. So what do we find out about these? Let's talk about some of the key details here. When it comes to the role of product management, right? This is a question I get asked a lot, right? You know, what is the role of how respected is this now, right? And what's the future of product management? What did you find out about how the role of product managers viewed inside companies?
What we found was that about half of the companies that responded view product managers as real leaders. And I think that's a tremendous difference between now and say, maybe 5, 8, or 10 years ago. I believe it was 61% of the product managers are viewed as, or 61% of the respondents said they're viewed as leaders in their companies. However, 57% of them said that product managers are still too tactical and not strategic enough. And at the 280 group, we have a concept that we use in our training, and we like to, it's kind of a joke, but what we say is you really need to be a product manager and don't be a product janitor. And what we mean by that is product managers will have all kinds of requests made of them, and their lists get very long in terms of tactical stuff that needs to be implemented. And the challenge as a product manager is to make sure that you get the tactical stuff done in a very productive way. But you don't want to be the one cleaning up all the messes as a janitor. You also then have to free up, you know, a good 30% at least of your time to be strategic, drive the vision, drive the business strategy, and really lead the team.
And I think this is probably one of the key frustrations with people in the role, right? We, as product managers, we get pulled in lots of directions, just like you said, where there's always requests coming our way. Sometimes we get wrapped up in really doing sales engineering work, right? And good, if you're a good product manager, yeah, the salespeople are going to figure that out, and they're going to ask you to come on the calls and help close those deals. Sometimes we get caught up just being the requirement jockeys and spending too much of our time on the requirement detail and the quality control aspects of the product, and not being able to get out and, you know, with the customers and do that strategic work of what needs to come next. Mm-hmm. Do you have any suggestions on trying to deal with this balance? Should the role be split up into two roles, or what do you tell companies?
Actually, I wrote a book about it. It's called The Phenomenal Product Manager. And there are a whole bunch of suggestions in there things that I learned the hard way. But here's a great example, right? You were talking about salespeople and the fact that as soon as they peg you as really being good, they're going to be requesting you all the time. That's what happened to me at Apple. You know, people learned that I really knew how to demo the operating system and new stuff that was coming up, you know, I just was inundated with requests to visit customers and the new stuff and so on. So the key in terms of working with salespeople, and there's a whole chapter on the Phenomenal Product Manager, the key is you really have to build leverage sales tools that make it really just brain dead simple for them. So, and you also need to, as you do things as you do favors for them, you need to ask them for things in return. For instance, if a sales rep, you know, really wanted me to demo a current product, I'd say, you know, I'm willing to do this one time, and here's the demo script, and what I'm going to do is teach you how to do this. And so I'll do it once, but don't call me back again. I want to empower you to be able to do it. Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch of other techniques like that. You know, one of the key findings of our study was that that product managers spend far too much time in the develop and QA phases of the actual product lifecycle. And at the 280 group, we have this thing that's called the optimal product process. It's a 7-phase product lifecycle. It starts off with conceive, coming up with great product ideas and prioritizing them. And then it goes into plan, develop, qualify, launch, maximize, and retire. And one of the consistent things we saw in terms of challenges of product management is product managers end up, as you mentioned, becoming requirements jockeys. And so they spend, many of them will spend 70, 80, 90% of their time just in sort of the feature list mode, as opposed to taking a holistic view and saying, what are we going to do in each of the rest of these phases? For instance, maximize. You've got a product out already. Are you doing everything you can to increase your revenues and squeak out as much profitability as you can? So that's one area where product managers really need to, and product management really needs to expand. One of the reasons why they do that, why product managers do that, is because they've never been trained on the entire product lifecycle. So if you haven't been trained on how to execute a good launch, or even work with someone who's executing the launch for you, you're going to tend to sort of move towards doing the things that you're most comfortable with that you already know how to do. The ironic thing about product management as a profession, we did a calculation at one point, and less than 2% of product managers have ever actually gone through any training for their job. And if you think about other professions, you know, a salesperson goes through all kinds of sales training. A finance person has to be qualified and learn exactly what to do. Programmers certainly have to go through lots of training, but product managers historically have not gone through that. So, and they're usually thrown into the role from, they're either a former engineer, former QA person, sometimes support, sometimes sales. So they don't necessarily have the background skills and knowledge. So one of the recommendations of the report is make sure that your product managers are trained on the entire product lifecycle, so that they can be effective not only in sort of helping to form and prioritize the requirements, but also really in helping drive success of the product through all 7 of those phases.
Mm-hmm. And you're speaking to my experience so much now too, that originally background in engineering, started leading projects that were developing products. And so I first sought out project management knowledge, right, to do a better job trying to lead these projects. And over time realized that I was doing more than just developing products, and didn't even know what that was called. It took me a while to stumble across this term of product management and going to a professional organization to find out more about what that is about. And now we have some tools, like you mentioned, your framework, which I believe is also well represented in the Guide to the ProdBoc, the AIPMM sponsored, that 7-phase framework, right?
Yeah, the ProdBoc is actually it's the product management body of knowledge. Mm-hmm. We were our strategic partner who helped to develop that with AIPMM. And the idea behind the product management body of knowledge was to create sort of a core set of roles, responsibilities, and processes and product lifecycle phases that could be used as a standard across the world. And we took the ProdBoc and the 7 phases, and then we actually built out a very deep methodology on top of it. So it's a worldwide standard, and then we kind of take it 3 steps further in terms of the optimal product process. I wrote a book about the optimal product process. It's free on the 280 Group website if you want to go and download it.
But I'll try to provide a link in the show notes for everyone listening to go find that too.
Great.
Very good. Yeah. So when it comes to I appreciate you highlighting this issue of we just haven't had a lot of training really as product managers. And frankly, it wasn't until I got involved in professional groups and I found things like the ProdBoc, I really had this bigger perspective of what takes place in product management, right? And I think if you would have asked me when I was in the middle of developing products, you know, are you a competent product manager? I would have said, well, sure, I'm developing products. They're being successful. You know, we generally know what we're doing. But I didn't have a good handle on the entire perspective of what a product manager should be thinking about. Mm-hmm. What did you find out in the study about what product managers said about their own competency or how people view the competency of product managers?
Well, what we found was that across teams, the skill levels of product managers vary greatly. 44% of respondents told us that. And what that means is some of your product managers have very advanced skill sets that they've learned on the job, or they may be part of that 2% who went to training. Then many of the product managers will have little or no skills. And there's a very strong desire to remedy that. But most of the respondents indicated that the skill level of their product managers was either average or below. So there's, I think it was 56% said that. So there's a huge amount of improvement that can be done.
Yeah, definitely a thirst for more knowledge about the role. And then as product managers, we work inside processes, right? And so a lot of organizations will talk to me about some kind of product development process that's appropriate for them. What have you found out about the product management processes in organizations?
We found that product managers believe that 49% of them believe that this is the biggest challenge. It's their product management process. It's either not very well defined. Oftentimes they'll have processes that are totally different across groups in the company, so there's no consistency. And interestingly, the directors and VPs, it was a smaller percent of them, only 40% believe that that process is a challenge. So the executives believe our processes are fine, and the product managers say no, not exactly. I think it was about 55% of product managers said the process of their company just isn't very well defined. That's over half of the companies that we surveyed. And one of the big findings of the report in the survey was that for companies that don't have well-defined processes and or that have multiple processes they run across the company, in other words, they don't have a standard consistent process, those are the ones that encounter the most problems. And there were three or four different problems that cropped up much more consistently when the companies didn't have a good standardized process.
Yeah, and I suspect some of that is going on just because of Agile coming in, and now there's organizations, at least large organizations, that are struggling with what is the right process for us, right? They may have been moved from one to another, and they're trying to embrace things. But I remember a study, I think it was the PDMA study back in 2004, that also said that this was a fundamental problem that, if I'm remembering right, I'll have to go look at this, I'll put it in the show notes, but it was on the order of 30 to 40% of companies that said they had no process, right? It just wasn't existent.
Yeah. Well, the reality is they have some kind of a process. It's just not documented, not consistent. I mean, they're doing things somehow, but who knows, you know, and if it's not documented, then oftentimes people are reinventing the wheel.
Yeah, it's not repeatable.
But I think you're right. When you introduce Agile into the environment, what we see is many times, you know, Agile, if you look at the seven phases of the life cycle from conceive to plan, develop, all the way out to retire, Agile really covers plan, develop, qualify. And oftentimes what happens is the companies focus on that portion of it, and the other phases really become ignored. So your effectiveness at launching products, your effectiveness at maximizing the value and retiring things get far less of a focus. You know, Agile has huge benefits, obviously, for lots of different types of products. but also, you know, here's a great example. I can't even tell you how many companies I've seen where they've decided, you know, they're Agile shops. Mm-hmm. And so rather than going through a little bit of upfront work, say doing like a business case, you know, before they invest a couple hundred thousand or even a couple million dollars developing a product, they'll dive right in and start developing it, right? Because, you know, it's all about not having to document things and getting code and features in front of people and validating things. But you know, had they looked at the overall life cycle and done just a little bit of upfront work in terms of really kind of sketching out a business case and answering some of the fundamental questions, now oftentimes they probably wouldn't have decided to develop the product, or they may have taken it in a very different direction, and it takes them, you know, they have to spend a lot of money and development time in order to figure that out.
The everyday innovators might have heard me say this before. I really feel like our processes, we don't have a lot of trouble with the development of products themselves. You know, we typically can figure out how to get products developed. But it is those earlier stages of work where we're doing the conceive work. Are we building the right product in the first place, right? Because if we build a fantastic product, but it doesn't solve any problems, customers don't care about it, it's not going to be successful in the marketplace. We might just think it's fantastic as developers. And doing that work to understand, are we solving a real problem? That's a fundamental issue that we still need to deal with.
Well, oftentimes it's, are we solving a real problem? Is it a problem that customers are willing to pay to solve?
Right.
That's pretty tricky to answer oftentimes. But then the other part of it is, you know, as a company, is this a strategic fit for us? Is it from a business point of view? Do we have the channels and the sales capabilities to be able to sell it? And what does it look like profitability-wise and also competition-wise?
Right. Does it make sense for us to be doing this versus other ways that this might be accomplished?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that doesn't mean not doing it, right? It could mean spinning it off, going to a open innovation approach, letting your partner do it.
Sure.
Other ways to get there. You said about 50% of the product managers identified that the actual process of product management was an issue in organizations, and a little bit less. I think you said around 40% of the directors and VPs.
Biggest overall challenge.
Okay. But was there a recognition that is this important enough that it needs to be changed?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that improvement can be a number of things. It can be, you know, as you mentioned, they may not have or know what the process is. It could be that they have a process and it's far too bulky and heavyweight and no one follows it.
Mm-hmm.
A great example of that is when I worked at Apple Computer, you know, our process for launching a new product was, you know, it was this massive binder. I think it was something like 600 pages of everything you were supposed to do. And I ended up launching about 25 products while I was there, and I never read it because it was just simply too much. So sometimes the process is too cumbersome, but there's definitely a recognition that if we could clear this up and get all on the same page about what the process is, have us all be trained, and not only that, get our stakeholders and the rest of the organization to understand what the process is and what they should be expecting at different times, there would be a huge benefit to the organization.
So let's talk about resistance to process just for a moment, because I suspect some everyday innovators hear this, you know, okay, they want me to adopt this process for product management, but they don't understand. My organization is so unique, right? My position generally is, well, we have these time-tested processes that have been shown to be productive. Why don't we first learn that, apply that, and then you can figure out how it needs to be tailored to your organization. What are your perspectives on, you know, the process, quote unquote, and companies adopting a process?
That's spot on. We've had a lot of people with that perspective where when we sit down and we show them the optimal product process or they read my book, all of a sudden they realize, you know, there are a lot of people who've been there and done that, and there's a lot we can learn from them. what we like to we have a saying. I think it was either Einstein or the Dalai Lama who said, in order to break the rules, you must first learn the rules.
Hmm.
So the optimal product process is the way we designed it. It's not designed so that everyone will rigidly do things in one only possible manner. It's designed so that it's flexible. You pick and choose what you want, but you're doing it in a very intelligent way.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a great example. In the optimal product process, we have these 9 core documents that tie into each phase. So there's a business case document, a market needs and requirements, a launch plan, a beta plan. And the idea behind them is they're really designed to be scalable. So if you're in a large organization that needs formal documents, needs to sign off on things, where if you're going to present to, you know, the executive staff, you need a very well thought out, you know, extensive, well-written business case. You can do that using the templates. But if you're in a smaller organization, you don't have to write anything down. You can open up the business case template and you can look at all of the critical questions that are in there and just make sure that you've thought through the issues. And you don't have to write anything down. And then there's always sort of the combination of in between. But what tends to happen is innovators tend to be really, really good at certain things, right? Really writing code, really good at coming up with great ideas. But there's a whole wrapper around that in terms of things that really tie into product success. And if you can leverage the work and learning of other people, you know, without having to adopt necessarily, you know, this cumbersome heavyweight process, I think it's just a huge benefit.
It kind of reminds me back to when in the software world, when agile development was just getting kind of started and extreme programming was one of the dominant methodologies. And there were specific things one should do if you said you're going to do extreme programming, right? You know, like group code reviews and pair programming, programming and pairs together. And other things. And a lot of organizations simply said, oh yeah, we're doing extreme programming. And when asked what that means, they would say, oh, we don't write any documentation and we code really fast. Right. It's like, I really appreciate that whoever said the quote was, you know, yep, I have to learn the rules before you can break them. And having that fundamental foundation of what to expect is necessary before you can figure out how to really tailor it to your environment.
Well, you know, I think this is you've hit on one of the big challenges in terms of the transition to agile. And that is, you know, the number of companies that we go into where they've adopted agile and then you ask them, well, tell us, you know, are you doing formal scrum or what are you doing? They'll say, we're sort of doing our own way.
Right.
And I think they would benefit tremendously by going through and really learning the foundations of scrum, for instance, and then saying, okay, this is sort of the best practices way. How can we change that to apply it and use it better with our particular circumstance? I think that would be tremendously valuable. But what we find is that a lot of organizations, you know, kind of invent their own. And we also found in the survey that a very large percentage of companies are using a combination, you know, a hybrid combination. And so they're sort of doing agile and they're sort of doing some waterfall and again, you know, why not learn from the people who invented Scrum? Why not learn from, you know, the optimal product process and sort of take the best elements and create something that's gonna really, really work well for you.
As one more word picture to help people with this, this is interesting timing because just in the last week, someone was telling me that they were taking art classes, painting classes, and from a pretty good abstract artist. Known in the local area. And, but they went to class and they first were having to learn how to paint, portraits, you know, lifelike portraits. Mm-hmm. And she asked, you know, you're an abstract artist. Why are we having to learn to do this first? And it was exactly the same statement, which was, you know, before you learn to break the rules, you have to know the rules, right? You have to know how to paint properly before you can then go explore how to do it abstractly.
Excellent example. Yep.
So speaking of agile and, back to this issue of product managers not being freed up enough to be strategic versus, you know, tactical and worry about the requirements and QA. This has actually come up quite a bit this year. I've seen it in forums and seen it discussed in meetings. The role of product manager versus product owner. And in one camp, you have people saying it must be the same person. And the way I differentiate this is the product owner by Scrum approach, at least, is the person who's always available to the product team whenever the product team has a question, and they control the backlog, the requirements. And the product manager has the, ideally, has the wider perspective of, you know, where do our ideas come from in the very beginning, all the way to how does our product perform in the marketplace to where we actually have to retire it eventually. So I don't know if your study directly helped address this or not, but let's talk about this issue of product manager versus product owner, if they're the same, if they're the different, you know, different person, and sure. If you found out anything about that in your study.
We absolutely did. Out of the companies that said that they were doing agile development, we found that 70% of them said that their product managers are also product owners. And there are a couple of implications about this that are really interesting. The first is many of those people haven't been trained as a product manager to begin with, let alone being trained as a product owner. So we almost have a double whammy in terms of a lack of training and skill set and knowledge. But the second is, if you are going to be the product owner and you're the product manager, you know, the amount of work that you've taken on is dramatically increased. And this is one of the issues that I brought up when, probably 10, 12 years ago when Agile really started hitting was, you know, we product managers are already pretty overwhelmed and challenged with tactical work. Now, if you're going to be the product owner, particularly if you're going to be at the stand-ups, and or if you're going to be available consistently and be making the calls, your ability to go strategic and your ability to influence and really keep track of all those other phases outside of just development is going to be significantly hampered. The way I like to think about it is the best way to structure the role oftentimes has to do with how large the effort is. Right? So on some products, you may have a small development team where a person can be a product owner and be the product manager. And in my opinion, that's kind of ideal because then the strategy and all of the business side really gets integrated in because it's one person. That person obviously has to have the right skill set. They also really have to learn how to be a team leader and in order to perform both of those roles. When you get to larger projects, then it starts to make more sense to say, okay, is there a product manager who can drive the business strategy and the voice of the customer and everything else working with product owners and sometimes multiple product owners? And that can be a better structure in terms of how it's set up. The key there is that there has to be a tremendous amount of trust. Mm-hmm. The product manager really has to establish themselves as the voice of the customer and be able to influence the product owner. But the worst case is where it degrades into a situation where the product manager kind of just becomes a product owner only. And so it just becomes let's manage the backlog. We'll ship feature after feature after feature, and what happens then is you lose the strategic focus and competitive focus longer term. So I like to call this coding yourself into a corner. Right. You ship 50 great features. Each one has a little bit of benefit to your customers, and it's great short term. And then you look and realize your competitors have done something that's taken them in a different direction. And from an architecture point of view and from a product point of view, you can't get there. And so it's that myopic. If you get so focused on, you know, just what features are going to be in the next sprint, and you don't have the big picture business perspective and the strategic perspective, you can really lose out.
And that's the real danger, you know, of becoming myopic like that, where we just have the emphasis on a product owner. They're maintaining the requirements that got established at some point, and oftentimes also requirements that come from competitors' actions, right? So they're trying to maintain parity in some sense with what competitors are doing. And they're not doing anything really of new value for the customers, because I don't think we should naturally assume that what the competitors did actually was the correct course to take. And without doing that strategic work, actually meeting with customers, understanding their needs, observing what their problems are. We don't have the opportunity for innovation to happen and figure out a better way to solve the problems, the better way to make the mousetrap than someone else might have already.
Well, and part of that comes back to what your strategy is. Right? Your strategy might be, we're going to be a Me Too product. We're going to copy every single feature and we're going to beat the competition on price.
Right.
And we're going to do it in a low cost manner, which is great if that's explicitly what you're trying to do. But you're right. You may miss the big picture, in terms of because you're just so focused on feature after feature after feature.
And that probably explains in your study some too why I think you said it was 70% respondents said that the product manager and the product owner were the same person. And that would probably influence why the numbers are also high for product managers not being strategic enough and being too tactical.
Of course. Yep. It's not only were they having challenges before Agile, now they've taken on the product owner role and they haven't been trained in either one. I think that one of the biggest things that could add value in Agile is for product managers to not only get be trained on product management, but to also be trained on product ownership and the specifics of the rules, as we were talking about in terms of Scrum. In fact, we have a new course that's it's the Agile Certified Product Manager and Product Owner course, where you learn the skills of being a product manager in an agile environment, the strategic and leadership and team influencing, but you also learn everything you would learn in like a CSPO certified product owner certification. So you understand Scrum and you understand the rules really well, because if product managers learn both of those, then they can go back to their engineering team. And if their engineering team has sort of made up Agile or they're doing things that are non-optimal, the product manager can say, no, here's the official Scrum guidelines. Here are the rules. Let's change this, and this. Mm-hmm. Here's a simple example. I can't even tell you how many teams I've seen where it's not clear who actually has the authority to call off a sprint. Right?
Right.
And if a product manager had gone through really good product ownership and product manager training, then they'd be able to say, before the sprint starts, here's what the rules are. Right, the only one who can call this off is the product owner. Period. The execs can't call it off, et cetera, et cetera. So again, it's that learn from what other people have the pain that other people have gone through.
Much rather learn from the mistakes of others than make them myself. So I know we haven't covered everything in the study, certainly, but hit some good highlights. For people that want to find out the details, where can they find the challenges in product management research study you did?
It's available as a free download. It's at tinyurl.com/productmanagementreport with okay. No spaces. So again, tinyurl.com/productmanagementreport.
Great. And I will also put that in the show notes to make it easy for everyone to go to that. And again, the show notes will be at theeverydayinnovator.com/044. And as the Everyday Innovators that are listening know, when we get towards the end, I always like to ask for a innovation quote. And Brian, what quote did you bring for us today and why did you choose that one?
Well, the quote I brought is actually one that we use in that we have in our 42 Rules of Product Management book, and that one is hope is not a strategy. And the reason why I brought that, it kind of ties back to the earlier part in our conversation where we talked about innovators are great at coming up with ideas and having a vision and oftentimes coding and getting working prototypes and working things going. But without the wrapper of business strategy, of a good business case, a lot of thinking about what's your market strategy, your channel going to be, mm-hmm. your launch, what's it really going to cost you to market and maximize this product? Without that, you're kind of going on hope. And what I would say to people who want to innovate is, learn those business wrapper things and ask some tough questions before you spend a lot of time investing investing your life and your energy and your time and your money in a product. You know, living in Silicon Valley and having been in the business for almost 30 years, I've seen, you know, literally thousands of people who have had a great idea. They've, you know, bet, sometimes they bet their house, you know, they've yep. mortgaged their house, you know, they've spent years working on something. And yet if they had answered some of those fundamental questions and thought through things a little more, they probably would have taken a very different course. So hope is not a strategy. Is my favorite quote.
Yeah, I love it. You know, the painful thing being in the midst of that, you know, we've both been part of startups and have helped advise in startups that we recognize that the founders often think about the thing they're creating in the rather real sense as their baby, right? And it quickly takes on a life of its own. And it's hard for them to step back or even for someone else to tell them that they need to step back. That they've put too much hope in what they're doing, that there isn't a really good basis for a value proposition and a product market fit there for customers. And well, that's tough.
Everyone wants to think they're Steve Jobs.
There was only one Steve Jobs. He was definitely unique. It's a tough act to follow. Very good. Well, I appreciate you sharing the quote with us. And how can listeners find out more about the work that you're doing?
Just go to our website, 2hgroup.com, sign up for our newsletter, and you can download the Optimal Product Process book. There's a sign up, I think, on every page. And follow our newsletter. You can also join our 280 LinkedIn group. It is 35,000 product management professionals. It's the biggest product management group out there, and we have really excellent discussions and announcements about what we're doing and so on.
Brian, I thank you for joining me and helping the Everyday Innovators understand some of the challenges in product management.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Everyday Innovators are people who look at problems and seek solutions instead of just ignoring them. You are particularly good at finding solutions that bring value to customers, and I so appreciate you listening. Help others on product teams become Everyday Innovators by telling them about this podcast. Also, check out productinnovationeducators.com, your one source for online product management and innovation training to help you excel in your career. To find the show notes and details of the discussion, go to theeverydayinnovator.com/044. That is where you'll also find the link to get the free copy of Brian's Optimal Product Process book, as well as the complete Challenges in Product Management report. Keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to Product Innovation Training your customers will love you for. To learn more, please check out the blog at theeverydayinnovator.com. Keep innovating.